Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show where we really try to unravel complex subjects, make them clear, actionable, and, you know, actually fascinating. Ever booked a flight, maybe found that perfect hotel, or secured a rental car with just a few taps, and they kind of wondered, what's the huge machinery working behind the scenes, the ones making it all happen? Well, today we're embarking on a journey, really digging into one of the absolute titans of the global travel industry, a company that quietly orchestrates millions of your travel dreams pretty much every single day. Our subject for this deep dive, it's Booking Holdings, Inc. You'll see it on the NASDAQ. It's as BKNG. And look, this isn't just another tech company. It's a, well, a global travel behemoth. It touches nearly every corner of the planet.
That's exactly right. And for this deep dive, our sources, well, they come from a pretty comprehensive investment research analysis, gives us a really rigorous breakdown of the company. We've also pulled from various company filings, the annual reports, earnings calls, that sort of thing, plus the latest industry reports. So it's genuinely a treasure trove of insights. We're looking into how this powerhouse operates, its strategic thinking, and you know where it's headed in this rapidly evolving travel landscape. We're not just looking at the numbers. We're trying to analyze the very DNA of its competitive advantage.
Right. And our mission for you today is to unpack exactly what makes Booking Holdings such a, well, a dominant force. We want to understand its significant and, frankly, pretty bold strategic shifts and explore the unique challenges it faces in this, let's face it, intensely competitive market. What's the secret sauce here? What makes this company tick? And maybe more importantly, what can its path tell us about the broader future of travel for, well, for all of us? Get ready to explore a really fascinating intersection of tech, travel, and global markets. So let's unpack this for you. We're going to begin by getting a lay of the land. What exactly is Booking Holdings and what makes it such an, well, an undisputed giant in the online travel world?
Okay, so at its core, Booking Holdings is the world's leading provider of online travel and related services. And when we say leading, we really mean it. It operates in over 220 countries and territories globally. That's just an incredibly vast footprint. Their stated mission is simple, but incredibly ambitious and, you know, relatable to make it easier for everyone to experience the world. They're basically the ultimate bridge builder in global travel. They connect you, the traveler, with, well, everything you need, that cozy boutique hotel, the rental car, the right flight, making the world just a few taps away. What's truly remarkable is how they've achieved this scale. It's not through a single monolithic brand, but actually through a really diverse portfolio.
That's a truly staggering global footprint. Right. But like you just hinted, it's not just one brand you're interacting with when you book through them, is it? They've meticulously built this whole ecosystem, right, of distinct yet strategically complementary brands. Could you maybe walk us through some of the heavy hitters in their portfolio and like what role does each one play in this big global strategy?
Absolutely. And this multi-brand strategy, it's fundamental to their success. It gives them diversified market exposure. And critically, it acts as a really powerful engine for innovation. Let's break it down. So the most prominent, the real flagship brand, is Booking.com. This is the world's largest online accommodation platform. It's the main revenue driver for the whole group, and it's especially dominant in Europe. There's a key reason for that, the European accommodation market. It's incredibly fragmented. You have hundreds of thousands of independent hotels, boutique places, charming B&Bs, small guest houses. They just don't have the marketing budgets or the global reach of, say, a Hilton or a Marriott.
Right, those big chains.
Exactly. So for these independent properties, Booking.com isn't just, you know, a marketing channel. It's an indispensable distribution partner. It gives them access to a global audience they could absolutely never reach on their own. And this unique market structure in Europe, it gives Booking.com significant negotiating power. It allows them to command higher commission rates compared to, say, the U.S. market, which is much more consolidated with those powerful hotel brands.
Ah, okay. That makes sense why Europe is so central.
Definitely. Then you've got Agoda. It's headquartered in Singapore. This is their leading online travel agency, or OTA, in the, well, incredibly fast-growing Asia-Pacific market. Agoda is crucial for Booking Holdings' international growth because it has this deep, localized understanding. It knows the travel patterns, the preferred payment methods, the consumer behavior in that region.
So not just a copy-paste of Booking.com, then?
Not at all. For instance, in many Asian markets, mobile wallets or QR code payments are way more common than credit cards. Agoda tailors its platform, its promotions, its customer service to those local nuances. It's a truly localized experience.
Interesting. Who else is in the family?
Okay, next up is Priceline. This was the original U.S.-based brand, famous for its name-your-own-price model way back when, right? That really shook up the industry.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right. Today, it functions as a full-service OTA, mainly focused on North America. But what's particularly interesting about Priceline now within the Booking Holdings ecosystem is its role as kind of an incubator. It tests out new technologies, new product concepts. For example, its AI-powered travel assistant, Penny, was developed there. It uses AI to offer personalized recommendations, help users plan trips more intuitively.
So they test things there first.
Exactly. It allows Booking Holdings to test cutting-edge features on a smaller but still significant market before rolling them out globally. Smart way to manage risk. And then there's Kayak. Now, Kayak isn't an OTA in the traditional sense. It's a premier meta search engine.
Okay, so it searches other sites.
Precisely. Kayak aggregates flight, hotel, rental car deals from hundreds of different travel sites, including Booking.com's competitors, actually, and presents them all in one place, easy to compare. It makes money mostly through advertising and referrals, sending users off to the booking sites. And like Priceline, Kayak is a vital innovation hub, especially for using AI in travel search. Think of it as the brain for really sophisticated search queries.
Got it. Aggregator and tech lab.
You got it. And finally, we have OpenTable and RentalCars.com. These are, you know, vertical specific leaders, restaurant reservations and car rentals, respectively. They might seem like smaller pieces individually, but they're absolutely indispensable components of Booking's bigger connected trip strategy.
The connected trip. We'll definitely need to get into that later.
For sure. They provide those non-accommodation services that are essential for building a truly comprehensive end-to-end travel itinerary. If you can book your flight, hotel, car, and your dinner reservations all in the same ecosystem, well, that creates a seamless experience that's hard to beat. Now, what's really fascinating here, the strategic advantage of this multi-brand structure, it goes way beyond just segmenting the market. The company masterfully leverages this diverse portfolio as like a de-risked R&D framework. Historically, these brands operated pretty independently, but the current strategy involves a much more coordinated portfolio-wide AI offensive.
Okay, so using all the brands together for AI development.
Exactly. By letting individual brands like Priceline and Kayak Pilot refine and really stress test new AI tech on a smaller scale, the company can innovate rapidly. They can conduct high-stakes experiments without disrupting the massive core Booking.com platform, which is, you know, their cash cow.
That makes sense. Don't break the main engine while you're testing new parts.
Precisely. If a new AI feature in Priceline's Penny dramatically improves conversion rates, for example, boom, it can then be quickly scaled and deployed across the entire ecosystem, including Booking.com. This approach fosters a much more agile and resilient innovation pipeline than if they tried to develop everything under one single monolithic brand, where a failed experiment could be catastrophic. It's a really smart way to manage risk while pushing the boundaries of travel tech.
So it's not just a collection of brands. It's this strategic testing ground for the future of travel tech, letting them iterate and innovate at, well, incredible speed. That approach certainly seems like a unique competitive edge in such a fast-moving industry. Now, let's shift our focus a bit. Let's talk about something absolutely fundamental to how Booking Holdings actually generates its revenue, its core business model. Our sources highlight a really significant and deliberate strategic shift from something called the agency model to a merchant model. What exactly do these terms mean? And why is this transition so profoundly important for the company and, you know, for us as travelers?
Okay, yeah, let's unpack this because like you said, it's fundamental. This isn't just some minor accounting tweak. It's a fundamental rewiring of their financial engine. The agency model, that's the traditional framework. It was the bedrock of Booking.com's initial massive success. In this model, Booking Holdings acts purely as an agent. They facilitate the reservation. Think of it like this. You book a hotel room through Booking.com. But you typically pay the hotel directly, usually when you check out or complete your stay.
Okay, so Booking is just the middleman.
Exactly. Booking.com then gets a commission from the hotel for that booking. It's a capital light model for Booking Holdings, meaning they don't tie up much of their own cash managing payments or anything. And historically, it had higher operating profit margins. It's basically a commission-based referral service. The merchant model, though, that's different. Here, Booking Holdings becomes the merchant of record for the transaction.
Meaning they take the payment themselves.
Precisely. They collect the full payment from you, the traveler, upfront, right at the time of booking. Then Booking Holdings sends the net amount, so the total payment minus their commission, to the service provider, whether that's the hotel, the airline, or the car rental company. This model gives Booking Holdings crucial, really unprecedented control over the entire transaction. And that control is absolutely critical for several strategic reasons. It enables them to bundle different travel components seamlessly. It lets them offer more flexible payment options to consumers, like, you know, installment plans or pay later options. And it helps create a much more integrated and personalized user experience right from search all the way through checkout.
So it's a fundamental shift in who holds the money and when. Wow. This sounds like a massive undertaking for a company their size.
Yeah.
How swift has this change actually been? And what do the numbers tell us about its tangible impact on Booking Holdings' financials?
Well, the shift has been surprisingly swift and decisive, actually. It really indicates a strong commitment from management to this strategy. If we look at the data, the merchant segment actually overtook the agency segment to become the largest source of revenue for Booking Holdings back in 2023.
Already? Wow.
Yeah. And it's significantly extended its lead in 2024. At Booking.com specifically, you know, the flagship brand, the mix of merchant gross bookings, that's the value of bookings processed under this model, grew from around 50% in 2023 to a striking 59% in 2024.
That's a huge jump in just 1 year for a company that big.
It really is. It shows how quickly they're pushing this transition. Mm. But this transition involves a very deliberate, very strategic trade-off. The merchant model is inherently lower margin for Booking Holdings.
Why is that?
Well, mainly due to higher payment processing costs. They're handling the transaction now, right? Plus increased customer service needs related to payments, and also the potential risk of chargebacks. This shift has been a primary driver of the compression we've seen in the company's overall operating margin. It was really strong, like 35% back in 2019, but it was down to about 27.7% in 2023.
So they're sacrificing margin percentage points.
Knowingly, yes. It's a calculated sacrifice. Management is accepting that near-term margin dilution because they see it as a necessary investment to build a more defensible long-term ecosystem. This is where that connected trip vision comes back in. By controlling the entire payment flow and the customer interaction, Booking can execute the strategy much more effectively. The aim is to increase customer lifetime value through smarter cross-selling, dynamic pricing, and building loyalty that goes way beyond just comparing prices.
But makes the platform stickier.
Harder to leave. Exactly. This integrated product offering creates higher switching costs for you, the customer. It makes it much harder for competitors, especially search-focused players like Google, to replicate their comprehensive user experience. The central investment question here really is whether those future gains in customer lifetime value, in market share, in platform stickiness will ultimately outweigh this near-term margin dilution. It's a very forward-looking move, prioritizing strategic advantage over immediate percentage points on the margin.
That sounds like a huge strategic pivot, especially for a company of their scale. Definitely a bold move to accept that hit on margins today for what they hope is a stronger competitive position tomorrow.
It makes me think about their global footprint again. Booking Holdings is clearly a truly global player. Where does it really shine, geographically speaking? And I guess where does that immense strength also create some unique vulnerabilities?
Yeah, it's fascinating just how international this business truly is. It is fundamentally a non-US operation. Get this. A remarkable 89.5% of its 2024 revenue came from outside the U.S.
Wow, almost 90%. Exactly. And even more striking, a staggering 78.35% of its total revenue was derived from its Dutch entity. That's where Booking.com, their flagship, is headquartered. This just underscores its profound, deeply rooted dominance in the European market.
So Europe is ground zero for them.
Absolutely. Europe is undoubtedly the company's stronghold and its primary profit center. We sometimes refer to it as a fortress, and for good reason. As we touched on briefly, the European accommodation market is highly fragmented. It's packed with hundreds of thousands of independent hotels, boutique places, family-run B&Bs, you name it. These smaller operators, they just lack the scale, the brand recognition, the marketing power of the big global chains. They don't have the sophisticated tech to manage online bookings, payment processing, global customer support on their own.
So they need Booking.com more.
In many ways, yes. This fragmentation gives Booking.com substantial negotiating power. It allows them to command higher commission rates, often in that 15-30% range, than are typical in, say, the U.S. market, where you have these powerful hotel corporations like Marriott, Hilton, Hyatt pushing back harder. This structural difference in the supplier market is a key reason for Booking's historically superior profitability compared to its more U.S.-focused rival, Expedia.
Okay, so Europe is the fortress. What about other regions?
Well, North America is another key region, but it's more of a growth market for them. They're actually underpenetrated there relative to Expedia. The U.S. accounted for about 10.5% of their revenue in 2024. The landscape is tougher there, with stronger direct booking efforts from the big hotel chains. And then there's Asia Pacific. This is absolutely a central pillar of their long-term growth strategy. Management has explicitly identified it as the fastest-growing major travel market in the world.
And that's where Agoda comes in strong.
Exactly. They leverage Agoda's strong regional brand and local expertise, alongside Booking.com's global presence, to really capitalize on that exponential growth potential.
That makes Europe sound almost like an impenetrable fortress for booking. But, you know, as with any immense strength, does that concentration also create unique vulnerabilities?
Right.
What's the flip side of this profound European dominance, especially given the current regulatory climate over there?
Yeah, this is a really important point, and it's critical for understanding the risks involved. While Europe is their core strength, that very same concentration creates a unique and pretty significant vulnerability to a single powerful regulatory body, the European Commission.
Ah, the regulators.
Right. The EU's Digital Markets Act, the DMA, specifically targets these large gatekeeper platforms.
Yeah.
These are companies that have a significant impact on the internal market, act as a key gateway for businesses to reach customers, and have what they call an entrenched and durable position. Booking.com has been officially designated as one of these gatekeepers.
And what does that mean in practice?
It imposes stringent rules on, well, pretty much everything. How they rank search results, they're prohibited from self-preferencing their own services over competitors. How they share data, they have to share certain data with their business users, like hotels. And even their contractual terms with hotels are under scrutiny, especially things like rate parity clauses.
What are those again?
Those are the clauses that historically prevented hotels from offering lower prices on their own websites than they offered on Booking.com. The DMA puts tight restrictions on those. So these rules, they pose a direct and very material threat to the company's established business practices right in its most profitable market. It could potentially compress their core commission rates and force changes that might reduce their competitive advantages.
Has this had any real financial impact yet?
Oh, absolutely. To give you a concrete example of the financial stake and the immediate impact, the company recently had to make a substantial provision, about $530 million, related to an antitrust decision from a Spanish competition authority.
Wow, $500 million.
Yeah. And this was specifically related to Booking.com's rate parity clauses and their distribution policies in Spain. This event just underscores how real and significant these regulatory risks are. This asymmetric risk profile being so heavily dependent on one region that is also aggressively regulating big tech companies is a critical factor for investors to consider. Adverse regulatory rulings could materially impact the company's core profit engine. It really is a classic double-edged sword. Huge strength from European dominance, but also concentrated regulatory risk in that exact same market.
Okay, shifting gears slightly again, the online travel industry, it just seems to be in constant motion, doesn't it? How big is this market overall, and what does the competitive landscape actually look like for Booking Holdings within it?
It's an absolutely massive market, and it's growing fast. The global online travel industry estimates put it worth over $612 billion in 2024.
$612 billion, that's huge.
It is, and it's projected to expand significantly, likely exceeding $1 trillion by 2030. That represents a compound annual growth rate, or EAGR, basically the average yearly growth of around 8.6%. This impressive growth is really fueled by a couple of things. Obviously, the ongoing post-pandemic recovery as travel demand bounced back with, frankly, surprising vigor, and also the persistent structural shift towards online and mobile booking channels. Consumers increasingly value the convenience, the choice, the transparency that digital platforms offer, whether they're booking on a desktop or more often now through a mobile app. So yeah, it's a highly attractive space to be in, but also one with incredibly intense competition.
So a massive and continually growing pie. Like, who are the main contenders then, vying for a slice of that $1 trillion pie?
Yeah.
How do they stack up against Booking Holdings?
Yeah, what's particularly insightful here, I think, is that the online travel agency landscape, it's often best characterized as a duopoly with a major disruptor.
Okay, break that down. Who's the duopoly?
The duopoly refers primarily to Booking Holdings and Expedia Group, EXPE. Together, they account for a huge chunk. Estimates are like 60% or more of all online travel bookings in Europe and the United States. Expedia is Booking's main global rival. Historically, it holds a stronger market position in North America. However, Expedia's business model is more exposed to those large, powerful U.S. hotel chains we talked about.
Right, the ones with strong loyalty programs.
Exactly. Those chains have significant brand loyalty and marketing muscle, which limits Expedia's pricing power and leads to structurally lower profitability compared to Booking's European dominance with all those independent hotels.
Okay, so Booking and Expedia are the duopoly. Who's the disruptor?
The major disruptor is unequivocally Airbnb. Airbnb. They are the definitive leader in the alternative accommodations segment. Think vacation rentals, private rooms, unique stays, tree houses, you name it. Airbnb's disruptive model and its incredibly powerful brand, which is built more on community and unique experiences, have actually forced both Booking Holdings and Expedia to invest heavily in building out their own vacation rental inventories. They're essentially playing catch-up in that space.
And Airbnb has advantages too, right?
Big time. Airbnb benefits immensely from strong customer loyalty and a significantly higher proportion of direct traffic people going straight to Airbnb.com or the app. That dramatically helps them reduce their reliance on costly performance marketing, which is a major expense for traditional OTAs like Booking and Expedia.
Okay. Duopoly plus Airbnb. Anyone else significant?
Well, beyond those direct competitors, you absolutely have the tech giants, particularly Google and maybe to a lesser extent Amazon, although Amazon's travel ambitions seem a bit more nascent still. Google, through Google Travel, represents probably the most significant long-term existential threat to the traditional OTA model.
How so?
Google leverages its, let's be honest, unparalleled dominance in global search to position itself right at the very top of the travel planning funnel. When you search for hotels in Paris, what do you see first?
Usually Google's own map and hotel listings.
Exactly. By integrating flight, hotel, and experience search directly into its main results page, often above the paid ads, Google can effectively capture user intent really early. It can commoditize the OTA listings below it and potentially disintermediate the OTAs from their customers entirely. This directly drives up customer acquisition costs for all the other players who rely on Google search for traffic. It's a huge structural advantage for Google. And finally, you also have significant regional competitors. Think Trip.com Group in China or Make My Trip in India. These local champions maintain really strong positions in their specific high-growth markets. They leverage local knowledge, strong domestic supplier relationships, tailored payment solutions that can make them formidable barriers for global players trying to expand there.
Wow. That's certainly a crowded and intensely competitive space. You mentioned hotels trying to get direct bookings earlier. What about that? Is the idea of hotels or airlines trying to get you, the traveler, to book directly with them, bypassing these platforms entirely? Is that a big threat to Booking Holdings' long-term viability?
Yeah, this is a really important and persistent question. It's a constant tug of war in the industry, really. Large hotel chains, major airlines, they continuously encourage direct bookings on their own websites. They heavily promote their loyalty programs, offer exclusive perks, free Wi-Fi, discounted rates, room upgrades, you name it. And they often implement best rate guarantees to try and convince you to book direct and cut out the OTA commission, which, as we said, can be pretty hefty, 15% to even 30%.
So the risk of being cut out disintermediation is real.
It's very real, yes. And it's something the OTAs actively manage and strategize around. However, there's a powerful mitigating factor at play, often called the billboard effect. This highlights the complex, often sort of symbiotic relationship between OTAs and suppliers.
The billboard effect, how does that work?
Well, OTAs function as this massive global marketing channel. They provide unparalleled visibility to properties that those properties simply couldn't achieve on their own, especially the smaller ones. The billboard effect describes a common consumer journey. A traveler might discover a hotel or maybe a specific deal on an OTA platform like Booking.com. But then, armed with that knowledge, they might navigate directly to the hotel's own website to complete the booking, maybe hoping for a slightly better deal or just wanting to earn loyalty points directly.
Oh, so the OTA acted like a discovery tool, even if they didn't get the final booking.
Precisely. Research indicates that a significant portion of direct bookings actually originate from initial discovery on an OTA platform. So while OTAs don't capture the commission on every booking they influence, they are still acting as this huge global funnel for discovery. They're generating brand awareness and driving demand for their partners, even if the final click happens elsewhere. Now, crucially, the impact of this direct booking threat isn't uniform across the OTA landscape. This trend poses a more significant structural headwind for Expedia.
Why Expedia more than Booking?
Because Expedia's business is heavily concentrated in the U.S. market, and the U.S. is dominated by those large consolidated hotel chains, Marriott, Hilton, etc., which have the brand recognition, the marketing budgets, the sophisticated loyalty programs needed to compete aggressively for direct traffic. In contrast, Booking's core strength, as we've hammered home, lies in that highly fragmented European market. It's characterized by this vast number of independent, family-run boutique hotels. These smaller operators often lack the resources to build a global brand, manage complex online marketing, or even maintain multilingual customer support. They are therefore highly dependent on Booking.com as an essential, cost-effective distribution channel to reach international travelers. This fundamental difference in supplier market structure provides Booking with a much more durable defense against the direct booking threat. It's a key underpinning of its superior historical profitability. It's not just a simple battle. There are some really complex underlying power dynamics at play, which truly explains why Booking is so strong in Europe.
Okay, it's clear there are some fascinating nuances in that competitive landscape, really complex dynamics. So for investors, people talk about a company's moat, right? That sustainable competitive advantage that protects its long-term profits. How does Booking Holdings maintain its leadership position in such a competitive and constantly evolving market, especially with those powerful tech giants like Google always lurking?
Yeah, the moat question is central. And this is where it gets really interesting because it ties together everything we've been discussing so far. The core of Booking Holdings' economic moat lies primarily in powerful two-sided network effects.
Two-sided network effects. Explain that a bit more.
Think of it as a virtuous, self-reinforcing flywheel. On one side, they possess just unparalleled inventory. We're talking over 31 million total reported listings globally.
31 million. That's hard to fathom.
It really is. That includes roughly 4 million unique properties, hotels, motels, resorts, and a staggering 8.4 million alternative accommodation listings, apartments, vacation homes, unique stays. This immense breadth of choice is what attracts the largest global audience of travelers. Simply put, if you're looking for a place to stay pretty much anywhere in the world, Booking.com likely has multiple options for you. That's the demand side. Now, this massive user base, in turn, makes their platform an indispensable distribution channel for accommodation providers, whether they're huge hotel chains or tiny independent operators. To access this vast global demand, suppliers are essentially compelled to list their inventory on Booking's platforms.
They can't afford not to be there.
Exactly. They'd miss out on millions of potential customers searching daily. And this continuous addition of supply, driven by the demand side, further enhances the platform's value proposition for travelers, which attracts even more users. See the flywheel. This self-perpetuating effect creates a formidable barrier to entry for potential competitors. Replicating the sheer scale of both supply and demand would require an enormous amount of capital, an extensive global team, and a significant amount of time, something very few players, maybe none, can realistically achieve now.
Okay, so the network effect based on scale is huge. Beyond just sheer size, though, how do brand equity and customer loyalty play into this durable competitive advantage? Because having a strong brand can significantly cut down on how much you have to spend to get customers right.
Absolutely. Brand equity and customer loyalty are crucial components for sustaining this moat. The Booking.com brand itself is one of the most powerful and recognized names in global travel. Its brand value was estimated at something like $13.4 billion back in 2020, and it's likely higher now. This strong global brand awareness is vital because it helps attract a significant volume of direct traffic.
Meaning people just type Booking.com straight into their browser.
Exactly. Or they open the Booking.com mobile app first, rather than relying on a search engine like Google to find them. This direct traffic significantly reduces the company's reliance on expensive performance marketing channels, like those paid search ads on Google. And that ultimately improves their profit margins. Every direct booking bypasses Google's toll booth, essentially. And to deepen these customer relationships even further and encourage more direct traffic and repeat business, the company has invested heavily in its Genius loyalty program.
Ah, yes, the Genius program.
Right. It offers tiered discounts, free breakfasts, room upgrades, other exclusive perks to repeat customers based on how often they book. Management has noted that Genius members show meaningfully higher direct booking rates and greater booking frequency compared to non-members. That confirms the program's effectiveness in cultivating a loyal user base and improving the profitability of those customer relationships. The company actually reports an impressive overall customer retention rate of around 67% in this very cutthroat industry, which is really a testament to the stickiness of their platform and the value their loyalty program provides.
Okay, network effects, brand, loyalty. Yeah. Makes sense. But we keep hearing about AI transforming industries, completely redefining competitive landscapes. How is Booking Holdings leveraging cutting-edge technology, and specifically artificial intelligence, to strengthen its already formidable position and maybe even build on this moat?
This is arguably their biggest strategic focus right now. And it's a direct, aggressive response to the evolving competitive landscape, particularly that threat from Google we discussed. Booking Holdings is aggressively leveraging generative AI, not just as a feature, but to fundamentally evolve its competitive moat. They're trying to shift it from one based purely on scale to one based on a superior, personalized, and deeply integrated user experience. The goal is audacious, really, to move from being just a transactional booking engine to becoming your ultimate intuitive end-to-end travel planning partner. They want to be the platform where your travel dreams actually begin.
Okay, that's a big vision. What are they actually doing with AI right now that's changing how you plan travel?
Well, they've already deployed some pretty impressive AI initiatives. First, there's the AI Trip Planner. It's integrated directly into the Booking.com app. And this isn't just some basic chatbot. It's a conversational tool. It allows users to describe their travel needs in natural, open-ended language.
Like you just talk to it.
Pretty much. You could say something like, find me a family-friendly hotel in Lisbon with a pool for under $200 a night, close to historical sites, for a trip next spring. Or even, plan a 10-day culinary tour of Vietnam focusing on street food and cooking classes. The AI will then generate curated itineraries, suggest specific accommodations, recommend activities, offer personalized recommendations. It significantly simplifies that whole discovery and planning process that typically involves hours of searching across multiple sites.
Okay, that sounds potentially game-changing. What else?
Then there's hyper-personalization. Their advanced AI and machine learning algorithms analyze this vast trove of proprietary user data they have. We're talking over a billion historical room nights booked, 100 million verified reviews, countless search queries. They use all that data to deliver hyper-tailored recommendations, dynamic pricing adjustments, customized search results. This data-driven approach has been shown to increase customer engagement by a significant 25%.
So it learns what you like.
Exactly. It's about anticipating what you want, sometimes before you even know you want it, making the booking process feel intuitive, effortless. Imagine the system knowing you prefer boutique hotels over large chains or that you tend to book active excursions, and then tailoring every search result and suggestion accordingly. And finally, they're using AI for profound operational efficiency. AI-powered agents are being integrated into customer service workflows. They can automate responses to common inquiries, changing dates, checking booking details, that sort of thing.
So freeing up human agents for complex issues.
Precisely. This improves resolution times for customers, reduces the need for human intervention for routine tasks, and ultimately leads to substantial cost savings for the company. Plus, it can improve overall customer satisfaction by providing instant answers 24/7. Now, what's truly fascinating here is how this deep investment in proprietary AI connects directly to their competitive battle with Google.
How so? How does AI help them fight Google?
Well, Google's primary advantage is its control over that top-of-funnel search, right? Where many travel journeys typically begin. By creating a compelling conversational AI planner fueled by its unique and extensive data set of real bookings, prices, and user reviews, Booking aims to become the primary destination for travel planning itself. They want to intercept you, the user, before you even perform a generic Google search. If you open the Booking.com app and ask it to plan your entire vacation, you've just bypassed Google's search funnel entirely.
Keep the user within their own ecosystem from the start.
Exactly. This strategy attempts to shift the competitive battleground away from the open web, where Google has a structural advantage, to Booking's own closed ecosystem. There, its proprietary data and integrated inventory provide a superior and, crucially, far more defensible position. The success of this AI-driven walled garden strategy, well, that will be a critical determinant of the company's long-term competitive standing and its ability to maintain that powerful moat against the tech giants.
It sounds like they're trying to build a true digital walled garden for travel, yeah, where your entire journey begins and ends within their ecosystem, powered by predictive and personalized AI. That's a profoundly significant strategic move, definitely one to watch closely as it unfolds. Okay, let's turn to the numbers now. How has Booking Holdings' financial performance actually looked over the past few years, especially given, you know, the tumultuous global events we've all lived through, notably the COVID-19 pandemic?
Yeah, their financial journey is quite a compelling story. It really tells a tale of resilient pre-pandemic growth, then a severe, almost unprecedented pandemic shock, followed by a powerful, record-breaking recovery. So pre-pandemic, say in 2018, 2019, the company showed strong, stable growth. Revenues hit $15.1 billion in 2019, built on a really robust 844 million room nights booked globally. It was a picture of consistent, profitable expansion.
Then 2020 happened.
Exactly. Then came the devastating COVID-19 impact in 2020. Global travel just stopped, almost overnight. The impact was severe and immediate. Revenue collapsed by a staggering 55%, down to just $6.8 billion. Room nights plummeted 58% to only $355 million for the year. The company had to take drastic measures, preserve cash, adapt to an environment where its core business basically evaporated.
Brutal. But then the recovery.
But what followed was a truly remarkable V-shaped recovery, really from 2021 through 2024. The pent-up demand for travel proved to be absolutely immense. By 2022, total revenues of $17.1 billion had already surpassed their 2019 peak. That shows incredible resilience, and the momentum just kept going. 2024 set new all-time records across the board. Revenue reached $23.7 billion. Gross travel bookings, that's the total value of all travel services booked through their platforms, hit an astounding $165.6
billion. $165 billion in bookings. Wow.
Yeah. And the total number of room nights booked exceeded 1.1 billion for the year. This rapid, robust rebound is just a powerful testament to that fundamental human desire to travel and Booking Holdings' essential role in making it happen. And interestingly, one key metric, their take rate, which is basically total revenues divided by gross bookings, it measures their monetization efficiency, the percentage they keep from each booking that has remained remarkably stable. It's hovered in the 14.1% to 14.2% range in recent periods.
So even with the shift to the lower margin merchant model, they're still taking about the same slice overall.
Broadly, yes. It indicates consistent pricing power and efficient monetization despite those significant business model shifts we discuss.
That V-shaped recovery is truly impressive. Speaks volumes about the underlying demand for travel, for sure. What about their profitability trends, though? Yeah. And crucially, how do they generate cash? Because profit isn't always cash.
Right. Good point. Profitability trends have certainly been dynamic. They've been influenced both by the pandemic's aftermath and, as we mentioned, that strategic shift to the merchant model. Operating margins pre-pandemic were exceptionally strong, consistently above 35%. They collapsed, obviously, went negative in 2020 due to the travel shutdown, but they've since recovered strongly. However, that transition to the lower margin merchant model, plus increased marketing investments during the recovery phase, did lead to margins compressing down to 27.7% in 2023.
Because of those extra costs, like payment processing.
Exactly. The merchant model involves absorbing payment processing fees, managing more direct customer service, taking on chargeback risks. Those are all costly. However, as the business normalizes, as it leverages its scale, and as it starts to realize efficiencies from some of these AI initiatives we talked about, margins have shown a strong upward trend again. They expanded back up to 32.8% on a trailing 12-month basis, that's TTM, the last 12 months rolled together as of mid-2025. So that indicates a robust return towards higher profitability.
Okay, so margins dipped, but are recovering.
Right.
What about their spending? Marketing must be huge.
Marketing is their largest single operating expense. It totaled $6.8 billion in 2023. Management keeps a disciplined focus on return on investment for this spending, constantly optimizing where and how they acquire customers. A key positive trend to watch here is the increasing mix of traffic coming from direct channels, people typing booking.com or using the app directly. That's significantly more profitable than traffic acquired through costly paid search channels like Google.
Right, bypassing the Google toll booth again.
Exactly. Every direct booking helps improve Booking's margins. And then there's free cash flow, FCF generation. This is a key defining strength of Booking's business model. Because it's asset-light, remember, they own no hotels, no airplanes, no cars, and because of uniquely favorable working capital dynamics.
Especially with the merchant model collecting cash up front.
Precisely. Collecting customer cash up front before they have to remit it to suppliers, that makes the company a prodigious FCF machine. Free cash flow reached nearly $7.0 billion in 2023 and has since grown to an impressive $8.5 billion on a trailing 12-month basis. This consistent, massive FCF generation provides enormous financial flexibility. Flexibility for strategic investments and for substantial capital returns to shareholders.
Okay, with all that impressive cash generation, how does the company decide where to deploy its money, and how does that benefit its shareholders?
They have a very well-defined and, frankly, quite shareholder-friendly capital allocation strategy. It prioritizes both reinvestment for growth and significant direct returns of capital to shareholders. They have a long and consistent history of using share repurchase programs, buybacks, to return capital and reduce their outstanding share count, which boosts earnings per share. In 2023 alone, they repurchased a substantial $10.4 billion of their own stock. That's huge. And then in early 2025, the board authorized a new massive $20 billion share repurchase program.
Another $20 billion on top of what was left.
Yeah, that was on top of the $7.7 billion remaining under the previous authorization. To put that $20 billion in perspective, it represents a significant percentage of the company's entire market cap. It provides a meaningful, consistent tailwind to earnings per share, boosting its per share value.
Didn't they recently start paying a dividend too? That was new, right?
It was a significant evolution, yes. Booking Holdings initiated its first ever quarterly cash dividend in early 2024, started at $8.75 per share. And then, demonstrating remarkable confidence in its cash flow outlook, the company promptly increased that dividend by 10% to $9.60 per share in early 2025.
What does starting a dividend signal for a company like this?
Well, the initiation of this dividend, layered on top of one of the largest ongoing buyback programs out there, it really marks a clear inflection point in Booking's corporate life cycle. It signals a transition, I think, from being seen as a pure hypergrowth company, which typically reinvests all its earnings for expansion, to becoming a more mature, highly profitable technology leader, one that's committed to delivering total shareholder return through both continued growth and direct capital returns. This strategic shift might broaden the stock's appeal to a new class of investors, perhaps dividend growth funds or growth at a reasonable price, investors who might have previously overlooked it.
Makes sense. What about acquisitions? Are they still buying companies?
They maintain a disciplined M&A strategy. It's often described as a string of pearls approach rather than pursuing huge transformative mergers. They focus on acquiring smaller strategic companies that either expand their geographic footprint, like maybe getting stronger in a specific region, or add new verticals to their ecosystem fitting into that connected trip vision. Foundational acquisitions like buying Booking.com itself way back in 2005 for just $133 million.
Wow, only $133 million. That's incredible ROI.
Isn't it? Or buying Kayak for $1.8 billion, OpenTable for $2.6 billion. These have been instrumental in building the company into the global leader it is today. These weren't just about adding revenue. They were about acquiring key technology, market share, and talent to accelerate their strategic vision. And they continue to prioritize substantial reinvestment in their core technology platform, especially in AI and machine learning, to fuel future growth and enhance that moat.
So, a really robust financial profile with a clear commitment to both driving future growth and directly rewarding shareholders.
Okay, looking ahead then. Beyond their current operations, what are Booking Holdings' big bets for the future? What strategic initiatives are they really pursuing to keep growing and expand their dominance even further?
Yeah, their long-term vision is fundamentally anchored by that concept we keep mentioning, the connected trip strategy. This is truly the cornerstone of their future ambition. It's all about evolving the platform from just facilitating single product transactions, booking a hotel, booking a flight, into a seamlessly integrated end-to-end travel experience, one that encompasses not just accommodations, but also flights, car rentals, attractions, tours, even dining reservations.
So becoming the single platform for your entire trip.
That's the goal. They want to be your single, indispensable go-to platform for everything related to your trip, right from the moment you start dreaming about it, all the way through planning, booking, experiencing it, and even after you return home.
How's that strategy actually performing? Are people booking multiple things? Well, the early results are actually very promising. They indicate significant traction. In the second quarter of 2025, for instance, connected trip transactions, where a customer books more than one travel vertical, like a hotel and a flight, within the booking ecosystem grew by over 30% year over year. These multi-product bookings now represent a low double-digit percentage of total transactions on Booking.com. That's starting to become meaningful. And critically, customers who book these multi-product trips spend, on average, 25% more than those who just book a single service.
Okay, that's the key metric, higher spending per customer.
Absolutely. By capturing a larger share of each traveler's total trip budget, Booking can significantly expand its total addressable market and dramatically enhance customer lifetime value. Imagine booking your flight to Rome, and then the app intelligently suggests, hey, how about a car rental for a day trip to Tuscany? Followed by reservations at top-rated local restaurants near your hotel. It creates a much deeper, stickier, more valuable customer relationship.
Right. What other big growth drivers are they focused on?
Another major strategic initiative is their aggressive push into alternative accommodations. This is them directly competing with Airbnb on its home turf. Recognizing that significant and probably permanent shift in consumer preferences toward vacation rentals, apartments, unique stays, Booking has made a huge concerted effort to expand its supply in this area. They now boast around 3.5 million properties, with 29 million reported listings just on Booking.com, and a grand total of 8.4 million listings across the entire group, including Agoda and others.
And is that segment growing faster for them?
Yes, consistently. This segment is growing faster than their core hotel business. Room nights in alternative accommodations are increasing at a robust 10-12% year-over-year pace. Alternative accommodations now account for approximately 37% of all room nights booked on the Booking.com platform. That's up from 33% in 2023, showing its growing importance to their overall business.
Is this just defense against Airbnb, or is it offensive?
I'd argue it's increasingly offensive. It leverages Booking's core strengths, its massive global demand, and its sophisticated technology. By integrating vacation rentals directly into its primary search results, Booking introduces this type of accommodation to its huge existing user base of traditional hotel bookers. It's effectively cross-selling into Airbnb's domain, bringing new eyes to vacation rentals. And the data suggests this strategy is successfully attracting suppliers, too. The percentage of short-term rentals listed exclusively on Booking.com, meaning only on the voting, Booking jumped from just 3% in 2023 to a substantial 13.6% by the end of 2024.
Wow, so more properties are choosing only Booking.
It seems so. During that same period, the share of properties listed exclusively on Airbnb actually declined. This indicates that Booking isn't just rapidly growing its inventory, it's also becoming the sole distribution platform for an increasing number of property managers who value its global reach and perhaps its integrated tools.
Interesting dynamic. What about geographic growth?
Then there's geographic expansion, with that Asia-Pacific region really identified as the crucial prize. Management consistently highlights it as the fastest-growing major market for travel globally, with industry growth expected in the high single digits for years to come, and they employ that sophisticated two-brand approach there, right? Using Agoda's deep local expertise alongside Booking.com's global scale and brand recognition. This allows for a highly localized user experience, tailored payment methods like mobile wallets, specific language support, culturally relevant accommodation types like ryokans in Japan, inventory that caters precisely to the diverse needs across that vast continent. This dual strategy helps them navigate fragmented regulations and intense local competition pretty effectively.
Okay, connected trip, alternatives, Asia Pacific, anything else major?
One more area is significantly expanding their B2B solutions and white label offerings. So beyond their direct-to-consumer brands, Booking Holdings is growing its business-to-business segment, providing its vast travel inventory and technology to other businesses. Their $1.2 billion acquisition of Getaroom back in 2021 was a significant investment to bolster their B2B hotel distribution capabilities, particularly in North America. They also provide white label and co-branded solutions through brands like Rocket Travel, which is part of Agoda, and the Booking.com affiliate program.
So other companies can use Booking's inventory on their own sites.
Exactly. These offerings allow partners, think airlines, credit card companies, corporate travel managers, even smaller travel agencies, to integrate Booking's extensive inventory directly into their own websites and apps, often under their own branding. This creates an additional, highly scalable, and very capital-light distribution channel. It leverages Booking's existing supply network to generate incremental revenue without incurring those high direct customer acquisition costs. It's a smart way to broaden their reach and monetize their huge inventory even further.
They're really pushing to be the comprehensive travel platform, aren't they? Not just a booking engine. And clearly taking the fight directly to competitors like Airbnb on their own turf, and even leveraging their scale in the B2B space, it's clear they have ambitious plans for capturing an even larger slice of the future travel market. But, you know, no investment is without risk. No company, not even a titan like Booking Holdings, operates in a vacuum. What are the primary risks Booking Holdings faces? And maybe from an investment perspective, how does the market currently view its value, given those risks?
Yeah, that's a crucial question for anyone looking at the company, whether as a consumer wondering about stability or as an investor weighing risk and reward. There are several key risk categories they definitely navigate. First, and maybe most obviously, cyclical and macroeconomic risks. As a consumer discretionary company, travel is often something people cut back on first when times get tough. Booking Holdings' financial performance is highly correlated with global economic health and consumer spending power. A significant economic downturn, a recession, periods of high inflation eroding purchasing power, or external shocks like, well, new pandemics, widespread geopolitical conflicts, even major natural disasters. Any of these could lead to reduced travel demand, lower average daily rates for hotels, and higher cancellation rates. We saw this play out vividly during COVID-19.
Right, very exposed to the broader economy. What else?
Next, and perhaps most immediately significant right now, are regulatory and legal risks. We talked about this quite a bit regarding Europe. As a designated gatekeeper under the EU's Digital Markets Act, DMA, Booking.com faces those stringent regulations in its largest and most profitable market. These rules could force fundamental changes to its platform, how it ranks results, how it shares data, its contracts with hotels, especially rate parity. Such changes could potentially compress its take rates and limit competitive advantages they've built over decades. And beyond the DMA, they also face risks from evolving data privacy laws globally, GDPR in Europe, CCPA in California, others popping up, plus potential changes in international tax policies, which could impact how they allocate profits across their multinational operations.
So regulation is a big ongoing cloud.
It absolutely is. Then there are competitive and disintermediation risks. We've discussed the primary long-term existential threat from Google leveraging its search dominance to promote its own travel products, potentially siphoning traffic and driving up acquisition costs for everyone else. There's also that persistent headwind from large hotel and airline suppliers pushing direct bookings through their own loyalty programs and offers. Though, as we discussed, this seems less acute for Booking than for Expedia due to Booking's strength in that fragmented European market.
Okay, macro, regulatory, competitive. What about internal risks?
Good question. There are definitely execution and technology risks. The successful implementation of their really complex, multi-vertical, connected trip strategy, that's not guaranteed. It requires immense ongoing investment in R&D, in integration, in making it all seamless for the user. Failure there could be costly. Also, failure to innovate quickly with AI or just generally keep pace with rapid technological changes from nimble startups or even larger tech players could erode their competitive edge over time. And of course, given the vast amount of sensitive personal and financial data they handle, cybersecurity is a constant and critical threat. A major data breach could severely damage their brand reputation and result in significant financial penalties.
Yeah, data breaches are a nightmare for any big tech company.
Absolutely. And finally, given that nearly 90% of its revenue is generated internationally, international operations risks are significant. This means constant exposure to foreign currency fluctuations. A strengthening U.S. dollar, for example, reduces the value of their foreign revenues and profits when translated back into dollars for reporting. Plus, there are just the inherent complexities and risks of operating in over 220 countries, diverse legal systems, political systems, economic conditions, varying levels of political stability, potential geopolitical tensions. It's a complex web to manage.
Okay, so a clear understanding of the potential headwinds they need to navigate. That's quite a list. From an investment analysis perspective then, how do analysts typically value a company like Booking Holdings with all these strengths and weaknesses? And what does that tell us about its current standing in the market?
Right, the valuation question. It's typically assessed through a multifaceted approach. Analysts will look at historical and forward multiples, conduct detailed peer comparisons, and perform scenario analysis to try and pinpoint a fair value range. When we look at peer comparison, BKG consistently trades at a significant valuation premium to its closest traditional competitor, Expedia Group.
Why the premium over Expedia?
It's generally seen as well warranted. Due to Booking's stronger top-line growth historically, its vastly superior operating and net profit margins, and that more defensible market position in the fragmented European accommodation market we keep coming back to. Now, compared to Airbnb, the valuation picture is more nuanced, more complex. Airbnb often commands a higher multiple on, say, a price-to-sales basis. Mm. That reflects its strong brand equity and maybe higher projected growth rates in its specific niche. However, Booking is a much more mature and profoundly profitable enterprise, so it often trades at a comparable or even lower multiple on metrics like price to earnings, PE, or enterprise value to EBITDA, despite its much larger scale and incredibly robust free cash flow generation. PE, of course, price divided by earnings per share. EBITDA looks at the company's total value relative to its operating profitability before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization.
So different metrics tell slightly different stories versus Airbnb.
Exactly. It depends what you emphasize growth potential versus current profitability and cash flow. Our sources also provided a framework for potential valuation under different operating assumptions using scenario analysis. This helps understand the range of possible outcomes. For year-end 2025, for example, a bull case might assume a strong global economy, rapid success with the connected trip, and fairly benign EU regulatory outcomes. That could lead to a price target maybe around $7,250 or more, driven by high teens to low 20s percentage earnings per share growth. The base case, which aligns with the core investment thesis in the research we saw, assumes a more steady macro environment, gradual but consistent adoption of the connected trip, and manageable EU regulation. This projects mid-teens annual EPS growth, leading to a price target perhaps around $6,200. Then there's the bear case. This might posit a global recession, a failure in connected trip monetization, really harsh EU penalties, and increased market share losses to Google. That could see the price target drop significantly, maybe towards $40 or $800, with only low single-digit EPS growth.
Quite a wide range, depending on how things play out.
It really highlights the importance of those key variables. As for appropriate valuation multiples, it's important to remember the extreme multiples seen during the 2020-2021 pandemic disruption. Those were anomalies driven by depressed earnings. They shouldn't be used as a benchmark. In a more normalized environment, given management is targeting at least 15% annual EPS growth over the medium term, a forward PE multiple somewhere in the 20-25x range is generally considered justifiable by analysts. This reflects a premium to the broader market, yes, but warranted by its market leadership, superior profitability, strong free cash flow, while also hopefully balancing against those notable regulatory and competitive risks we've outlined.
It's clear that while it's an incredibly strong player, there are definite variables to watch and a range of potential outcomes. For listeners who want to track this company's performance and strategic execution themselves, what would you say are the most important things, the key indicators to keep a close eye on?
Yeah, there are a few key performance indicators or KPIs that really cut through the noise and tell the story. First, always monitor gross bookings and room nights growth. These are the fundamental top-line volume measures. They show how much travel is being booked, the sheer number of overnight stays being facilitated. You want to see consistent, healthy growth here as a proxy for underlying demand and market share.
Okay, volume growth first. What's next?
Second, keep a close eye on their revenue mix and take rate. Watch that percentage split between merchant and agency revenue. And critically, see if the overall take rate, the percentage they monetize from each booking, remains stable or even slightly increases amidst this business model shift. This indicates their overall monetization efficiency and pricing power.
Got it. Mix and monetization. Third.
Third is marketing efficiency. Specifically, watch their marketing expenses as a percentage of gross bookings. If this ratio consistently creeps up, it could signal rising customer acquisition costs, maybe due to heightened competition, particularly from Google. You want to see them maintain or ideally improve this efficiency over time.
Right. How much are they spending to get each booking? Makes sense.
Fourth, look for disclosures on connected trip penetration. This means tracking the growth of those multi-product bookings. We talk about how often flights and cars are attached to hotel bookings. Look for any commentary from management on the impact on customer lifetime value. This metric directly shows how well their core long-term strategy of bundling services is actually performing.
So tracking the success of that big strategic bet.
Exactly. And finally, fifth, pay close attention to their direct and mobile app traffic mix. An increasing percentage of bookings originating directly from the company's own apps and websites rather than through paid search channels like Google. That's a key indicator of strengthening brand equity, growing customer loyalty, and ultimately future margin improvement potential because it reduces their reliance on those costly paid marketing channels.
So it really comes down to watching the trends in how people book, where they're booking from, and crucially, how the company adapts its strategy to capture those new habits and cement its position. Wow, what an incredible journey we've taken today, really unpacking Booking Holdings. From this powerhouse built in a strategically diverse portfolio of global brands, Booking.com, Priceline, Agoda, Kayake, to its bold strategic pivot towards the merchant model and that ambitious connected trip vision. It's abundantly clear this company is not standing still. They are aggressively leveraging generative AI, not just as some add-on feature, but to fundamentally redefine the very nature of online travel planning.
Exactly right. I think the core insight here, if you boil it down, is that Booking Holdings is making significant long-term strategic investments, particularly in AI and in building out that integrated travel ecosystem. They're consciously accepting some near-term margin pressure to build what they hope is a much more defensible long-term moat and ultimately capture a greater share of your total travel wallet. Their immense strength in fragmented markets like Europe, combined with a truly robust financial position and that new, clear commitment to direct shareholder returns through buybacks and dividends, it really sets them apart as a leader in this intensely competitive industry. They are actively building a fortress for the future of travel.
And it really makes you wonder, doesn't it? As Booking Holdings and other tech giants race to become your ultimate travel planning partner, leveraging sophisticated AI to anticipate your needs, curate your entire journey, how will this reshape the way you, the listener, dream about, plan, and ultimately experience your next adventure? Will you start your next trip planning session with a casual search on a general search engine? Or will it begin with a deep personalized conversation with an AI trip planner that knows your preferences inside and out, guiding you every step of the way, all within its own comprehensive ecosystem? The future of travel planning, it really feels like it's becoming conversational. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep questioning, and keep learning.